Good morning. May it please the court. I'm John Gerbelius from the Public Defender's Office, and I represent Joshua Benitez. My bar registration number is 41168.
Excuse me. Could I ask you to speak a little bit louder or put your mouth closer to the microphone?
I'm John Gerbelius from the Public Defender's Office.
That's much better. Thank you.
And I represent Joshua Benitez in this matter. And my bar registration number is 41168. Your Honors, this morning I plan to discuss whether my client's evidence of prior incarceration was unfairly prejudicial and inadmissible in this case. And I do plan to reserve time for rebuttal, if I may. Now, it's axiomatic in a criminal trial that the defendant is entitled to be tried only upon those charges in the indictment and not for past uncharged conduct. And it's certainly axiomatic that the defendant is entitled not to be tried based on his or her character. Now, Your Honors, in this case, it's important to keep in mind that the state did not introduce evidence that my client had a motive to menace Sergeant Padgett in this. Rather, the state introduced evidence that Sergeant Padgett recognized my client as a prior inmate from the jail 2 years before. Now, this evidence requires two inferential leaps that were unsupported by the evidence in this case. The first is that the prosecution needed to show that my client recognized Sergeant Padgett at the time of the incident. And second, the prosecution needed to show how my client's recognition and prior incarceration alone provided motive to menace Sergeant Padgett.
Mr. Gervilius, prior to the time of trial, the trial court is presented with this question as to whether this evidence ought to be admitted. And as I understand the presentation to that trial court, there was some suggestion that since the officer knew Mr. Benitez, that Mr. Benitez had some motive for pointing the rifle at him. And on that basis, the anticipation was that this would be relevant, marginally so perhaps, but relevant nonetheless. So do you agree with that staging of the events before trial?
I believe that was, yes, that's correct.
Okay. Now, we get to trial, and there is no evidence that Mr. Benitez recognizes Mr. Padgett, but there's no evidence that he doesn't recognize Mr. Padgett, correct?
I would disagree with that, Your Honor.
Okay, and explain that to me, because I...
Well, Your Honor, on direct examination, Sergeant Padgett admitted that my client didn't appear to recognize or believe him when he said he was a sheriff's deputy. And certainly on cross-examination, and I'm talking about trial to start with your question.
Right.
And certainly on cross-examination, he reiterated that twice, I believe. And he agreed, no, he did not appear to recognize or to believe me when I said I was a member of law enforcement. And to kind of go earlier on in your question, Your Honor, I do believe that was sort of the expectation that it would be relevant, but the problem with that, as we know from Garner and other cases, is we need to resolve these questions when we're going to put other act evidence before the jury before it gets before the jury. And the problem in this case was it was out of the bag before we could even really, before we knew this. Now, I'm also not standing here before the court arguing that we have only the benefit of hindsight, because certainly we have Sergeant Padgett's testimony later in trial, and certainly the trial court in its findings at sentencing said that this appeared to be a random act of stupidity and not because my client recognized Sergeant Padgett. But if we look back at the motions hearing, we have to ask ourselves what evidence was presented that my client recognized Sergeant Padgett. And we don't even know why Sergeant Padgett recognized my client. He did say that he recognized him from the jail, but we don't know why. Sergeant Padgett testified that my client had never been written up for any disciplinary issues. Sergeant Padgett failed to identify any single instance when they would have even met face-to-face and interacted. So we don't know. Maybe perhaps, for instance, Sergeant Padgett maybe saw my client's booking photo and had to process paperwork. We just don't really know.
Does it make any difference? I mean, here Mr. Benitez... I guess the defense was he was being chased, but there is no evidence that anyone was chasing him. correct?
Well, there was Yasso's testimony at trial that he was being chased, but we didn't really rely on that in closing.
And there's plenty of evidence to show that he, in fact, pointed the rifle toward the officer's family.
I would disagree with that.
Okay.
First of all, Sergeant Padgett is the only witness who testified to seeing a rifle pointed in his direction. There were no other witnesses who testified as to such. And if we look at the jury verdict, there were jurors in this panel who had reasonable doubt that my client knowingly pointed a rifle at Sergeant Padgett because they failed to convict him of unlawful use of a firearm. And I believe that that jury verdict was reflected by the fact that the evidence in this case was not overwhelming.
But Mr. Gravelius, wasn't Mr. Benitez convicted of unlawful use of a firearm by an intoxicated person?
Yes, Your Honor, and if I'm not mistaken, the elements of that offense more or less require that my client possess a firearm while he is intoxicated. And we never disputed at trial that he had a firearm somewhat in his possession. The dispute was whether or not he was pointing it at Sergeant Padgett. And certainly, as you know, the unlawful pointing the firearm at Sergeant Padgett was based on the exact same body of evidence as the menacing count. But Your Honor, going back to what you were talking about earlier, Judge Graham, about the recognition part of this inquiry, but I do want to discuss the second inference that was required in this case to make this evidence relevant and not unfairly prejudicial. And this wasn't discussed below, and it wasn't discussed by the state in the answer brief. The problem here is even if we assume that my client recognized Sergeant Padgett, that doesn't provide motive in this case. The problem is that without evidence of any sort of interaction between the two, the probative value of that evidence really is just a character. It is character. It's just assuming that because my client is in jail, he hates the people, the members of law enforcement, who guard the jail. There's no other evidence in this case that suggests why my client would have motive aside from his status as an inmate. And as we know, that's an improper inference.
Mr. Gravelius, you mentioned that this incident for which Mr. Benitez was charged occurred 2 years after he had been in the county jail. Was there any evidence about whether there had been any interaction between Mr. Benitez and Officer Padgett in that intervening 2 years?
No, Your Honor, there was no evidence presented on that whatsoever. I mean, we do know that Fort Morgan's a small town, but no, there was no evidence.
Was there evidence that Mr. Benitez and Officer Padgett both lived in Fort Morgan during that two-year period?
We do not know that from the record, no, Your Honor. But Your Honor, and I do want to also draw attention to the fact that I want to go back to what the trial court stated about this recognition question. At the close of the motions hearing, it did state on the record, and I'll quote this, "I guess it is just a question of, if this happened, did Mr. Benitez point the gun at Sergeant Padgett because he knew Sergeant Padgett and knew him from being a Morgan County Sheriff's deputy, or did he just do it as a random person? It could have just been anyone. I don't know, and I guess I don't know based on the testimony that's been presented today whether or not I have enough information." So, Your Honors, just to reemphasize, these two inferential leaps, they're not supported by the record. Now, and we know this also, and I didn't mention this before, that the state basically conceded as much in closing argument. It got before the jury and told the jurors, we don't have motive here. I don't have to show motive. We didn't show motive in this case. The evidence in this case, the prior incarceration, did not serve any purpose of establishing motive, nor did it show the background of the crime or any other known res justi purpose. And sort of exacerbating the harm in this case, Your Honors, is the fact that no limiting instruction was provided by the court, despite its statement in its written order that it would provide one. The jury was never told how to use the evidence, and certainly it wasn't really told how to not use the evidence.
Mr. Gravelius, did the defense attorney at trial ask for a limiting instruction?
No, Your Honor, the defense attorney did not. But again, the court was well aware of its duty because it stated so in its written order. that it would provide a contemporaneous instruction.
Was there a closing instruction saying that the evidence that Mr. Benitez had been in jail could be only used for a limited purpose?
No, Your Honor, there was a generic limiting instruction in the written instructions. I believe it was instruction number 11, and it just had said, it's the boilerplate, evidence had been admitted in this case for a certain purpose. You were instructed to use the evidence for that purpose. But that instruction failed to identify any piece of evidence that it was admitted for a limited purpose, and no evidence was admitted for a limited purpose per the trial court's ruling at trial.
So when that evidence was admitted during the trial judge never said, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I'm admitting this evidence for a limited purpose, and here it is?
That's correct, Your Honor. That was never done.
And Mr. Greville, to follow up on an earlier exchange you and I had, part of the trial court's statement when he talked about no element of why was that all that matters is that he pointed a firearm, a deadly weapon, at Sergeant Padgett and his family. And as I understood your previous responses, you don't think the evidence supports that statement by the trial court either.
Sorry, which statement are you referring to, Your Honor?
Well, perhaps that's the prosecution's statement. And your response was that you don't think the evidence supports that statement.
Well, Your Honor, I certainly think that that's a contested issue, and it's reasonable people could differ on that question, as the jury apparently did in this case, yes. But I don't think that the evidence in this case of prior incarceration, even at the close of the motions hearing, had any ability to explain my client's alleged acts in this case, because, again, there was no real evidence that he recognized Sergeant Padgett, and there's no evidence as to why, even had he recognized him, why he would point a rifle at him. It just failed to explain anything about that alleged act. Your Honors, unless there are further questions, I would like to reserve the balance of my time for rebuttal.
Very well, Mr. Gravelius, you have 3 minutes and 38 seconds.
May it please the court, I'm Patricia Van Horn, registration number 30,002, and I represent the people.
Ms. Van Horn, as I asked Mr. Gravelius, could you try and speak with your mouth close to the microphone so we can hear you?
Yes, Your Honor.
That's much better. Thank you.
I'm usually loud, so it's not a problem. The trial court properly admitted the evidence that the defendant had been incarcerated in the jail where the deputy worked because it offered an explanation for the crime. The evidence was admissible both under just general relevancy principles or as res geste. Otherwise, how would we know why this inexplicable act occurred? It offered an explanation for why the defendant would point a rifle at a man who was sitting in a McDonald's eating dinner with his family, which was in turn probative of his mental state.
As I understood Mr. Gravelius's argument, and I don't mean to put words in his mouth, but his comment, as I understood it, was, so what? Even if you established that he knew the officer by virtue of a prior incarceration, it doesn't establish bias or animus or any ill feeling that would explain why he pointed the rifle at the deputy.
I think a jury could properly infer that he had some dislike of the deputy simply because he was a deputy at the jail where he had been incarcerated. There was no other evidence suggesting that these two men had any other connection whatsoever. So it gave the jury the context in which this crime occurred.
Ms. Van Horn, how is that consistent with the prosecution not even arguing motive during closing arguments?
Your Honor, I think what the prosecution was trying to say there is we are not required to prove motive because it's not an element of the crime, which is true. But evidence of motive, of course, often is probative of one's mental state and other things that the prosecution is required to prove. So I think that's perhaps what the prosecutor was trying to say. I don't have to prove why he did it. I don't have to prove motive.
What then is your response to the argument that even if Mr. Benitez knew that Officer Padgett had been at the jail, that would have created a motive for, if there was no other evidence that he had been written up or that they had any disagreements of any kind?
I don't think the fact that there was no evidence that they had some kind of altercation, when we're looking at the admissibility of the evidence, when the trial court's making the determination, is this evidence admissible? Given that this is the only way these two men apparently know one another, the lack of some kind of bad altercation between them, I don't think undercuts the admissibility of this evidence. It could have happened. He could have just had ill feelings toward the deputy, given the fact that he was incarcerated there. But the fact that we don't have any evidence of that doesn't undercut the admissibility of the evidence, since it's apparently the only place these two men would have known each other from.
So it's offered to explain a otherwise totally random act?
Yes, Your Honor. And in res geste principles, that's often the case, where when you're bringing in evidence, how would these two people know each other? Why would this person do this? It gives the background for the jury so they understand possibly how this event occurred.
Isn't there a gap, and specifically like a two-year gap here? I have trouble understanding your res geste argument, because res geste usually is defined as meaning events that occurred contemporaneously with or shortly before the charged offense, that help provide a context to understand what was happening. But here we're talking about a situation that existed 2 years earlier than the incident for which Mr. Benitez was charged and convicted.
In Gladney, which is cited in my answer brief, Gladney recognizes that things occurring months before the charged crime can be admissible as res geste.
So are you aware of any case that has held that something occurring 2 years before it could be admissible as res geste?
Not off the top of my head, Your Honor, but I think Gladney just recognizes we haven't put time limits on this. We evaluate it based on the facts involved in a particular case. So I know the defendant has argued that it wasn't contemporaneous, therefore it wasn't admissible as res geste, but Gladney itself says we don't put those sort of time limits on it.
So the temporal context is not particularly important. It's the relationship context that's important for res geste.
Yes, Your Honor, in this case, because this apparently is the only other relationship or encounters these two men had. If this court has no other questions, I'd ask that the defendant's conviction be affirmed.
Thank you, Ms. Van Horn.
Thank you.
Your Honor, it's just a few follow-up points. I want to go back to this idea that the evidence could be admitted because the jury could be put in a position to infer the sort of conditional facts or inferences needed to actually get this evidence to show motive. As we know from Garner and related cases, we cannot be in a position where we simply just give other act evidence to the jury in the hopes that they'll infer the right facts. Moreover, as I've discussed, these two inferential leaps are actually significant, and when you have evidence that requires laying inference upon inference, that really just goes to the prejudice problem as well as the weight between probative versus unfair prejudice, because if you have to use these inferences to even give it probative value, that tips the scales in favor of unfair prejudice in this case.
Mr. Grevelius, how do you respond to Ms. Van Horn's suggestion or assertion that this is res geste evidence rather than prior bad act evidence?
Well, Your Honors, I have a couple different responses. First of all, it's not res geste because it's not relevant. We need to make sure we get the cart before the horse. Without establishing that the evidence is actually probative of anything, be it motive, motive or background, it can't be res geste. It can't explain the background of the crime. And we know from the prosecution's closing, because they basically conceded that the evidence wasn't probative of anything, the jury would have to speculate were its words in rebuttal closing. I don't have to show motive, I don't have to show this because it would require, and they said it would require speculation. Also, Your Honors, even if this evidence somehow does provide some background, albeit limited, it's still res geste evidence is subject to 403, which prohibits admission of unfairly prejudicial evidence. So even if something can explain the background of a crime, it still needs to be probative, and its probative value can't be substantially outweighed by the danger of unfair prejudice, which it was in this case, because the probative value was so weak due to the inferential leaps needed to even get this evidence off the ground.
Mr. Grevelius, what about your response to Ms. Van Horn's comment about the temporal issue, that the evidence was from 2 years earlier and her reliance on the Gladney case?
Well, Your Honor, Gladney, if I remember, was a case where, I think it was a murder case, where the defendant had been in an altercation with the victim, you know, maybe it was a couple months before the murder, but that provided the motive and the background to the whole story of the murder. That's why the defendant killed the victim, and it was pretty clear from the evidence in that case that that's why you had it. I know that was 2 months before. Here we had 2 years. The temporal aspect is important in res geste because it does help, I mean, it does inform whether or not it's background or part and parcel of the crime. And here we have an event that was 2 years old, and there's no clear connection between the two because the prosecution never established it. So the temporal lag here is important because we wouldn't reasonably expect my client to just out of the blue remember who this Sergeant Paget was without any sort of interaction. It's not a strict requirement of res geste, but it certainly is an important one, the contemporaneous requirement. Your Honors, unless there are any further questions, I would ask that this court reverse.
Thank you, Mr. Grevelius. Thank you again, Mr. Grevelius and Ms. Van Horn. We appreciate your coming today, especially in light of the snowy weather. The case will stand submitted, and a written opinion will issue in due course.